Asia Pacific currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Asia Pacific currents.
News and labour issues.
Well, I just accidentally hit that again. Listeners, I'm so sorry, but you are listening to Asia Pacific Currents this morning, 9 o'clock on Saturday, the 23rd of May. I'm Giselle Hannah.
I'm Sam.
And we're taking you through to 9:30 this morning. Wow, I haven't done a technical blooper in such a long time. I suppose it's always good to keep those fingers carefully tuned. So coming up on the program today, firstly, Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on the web, all the www.aawl.org.au. We're on Facebook and Twitter, and you can tune in to find out more about what's happening across the Asia Pacific region, particularly in the labour movement. In the second part of the show today, our feature interview, which I told you about last week, is Miles Kero. She is the secretary of the International Department of the Kilosang Mao Uno. They are a militant labour federation in the Philippines. I spoke to Miles about the murder of more than 70 workers at Kentex factory in Manila, or on the outskirts of Manila in the Philippines. This is a footwear company that went up in flames because of the negligence and outright lies of the owners of that particular factory. But of course, first up on the program, news from around the region.
Tens of thousands of Turkish auto workers take industry action. Last week, around 5,000 workers at the Rinalight car factory in Brescia went out on strike demanding better pay. They were soon joined in solidarity protest by thousands of Fiat car workers who also went out seeking better pay and conditions. Those strikes are now affecting the whole industry region, with many other work seats also down tolls. Workers have also started electing their own union committees as the protest has also become one against yellow union and pro-company union leaders.
An absolutely fantastic development there in Turkey. Of course, we know that the labour movement in Turkey is so heavily dominated by yellow unions, especially in the highly militarised country. So the fact that the Renault car workers went on strike, followed very closely in solidarity by Fiat car workers, really shows that this is looking to join up the entire industry in industrial action. Moving now to Thailand, yesterday, the 22nd of May, was the first anniversary of the military coup in Thailand. After 1 year, the military is still in power and showing no sign of going back to the barracks. With the approaching first year anniversary of the coup, the military has become even more vigilant in cracking down on any dissent, whether it's via labour organising, shows of defiance, or talking about freedom. Nevertheless, activists are still resisting and campaigns to free political prisoners do continue.
Regional boat crisis, part of the ongoing war on refugee. As reported last week, thousands of displaced workers from Burma and Bangladesh are stuck in the high seas as they try to fill repossession, exploitation and poverty. Their stations has been made worse by increasing aggressive and repressive policy by government around the region as they seek to control and restrict people's ability to feel exploitation and repression. In this regime, Australia has led the way, while in Europe, many other governments are also militarizing their responses. Nevertheless, many workers and communities are defying their government orders by helping those refugees, while there are pro-refugee protests in countries such as Indonesia, Malaysia, and Australia.
Yeah, absolutely appalling what we saw there with Tony Abbott himself saying nope about providing a humanitarian solution to this crisis of refugees who are basically on the high seas with nowhere to go. There was a great demonstration in Melbourne last night at 5:30 in the city. It even got some pretty mainstream media coverage, so that was really excellent to see. And we definitely need to keep up the pressure in relation to the refugee campaign. We cannot have this government exercising the influence it has across the region to simply send boats away or drag them back out to sea. Moving now to Japan. As reported a number of times previously, Japanese workers continue to face increasing pressures at work via long work hours and precarious work contracts. In a recent action, thousands of people rallied in Tokyo to protest against the government's proposed new laws. Labour activists say these new laws will lead to an increase in karoshi, which is death from overwork, as they will increase casualisation rates and increase the hours of work, whether paid or unpaid. The effects of such legislation can already be seen at places such as the Okubu Glass Company, that wants to reintroduce 12-hour shifts via a subcontracting arrangement. And interestingly enough, in Korea, the Park administration is also wanting to bring in new labour laws that aim to increase the levels of contractualisation and to remove constraints on the number of hours workers can work per day. So this is a regional push. This is work choices regionally, and we really must oppose it, not just, well, obviously in Australia we must keep up the fight, but it is an international fight. We can't lose this across borders.
The true costs of the fashion industry exposed once again. As reported before, the condition and exploitation in the fashion industry around the world are among the worst in the world. While workers toil under incredible pressure and dangerous conditions, the fashion house of the world make huge profits by selling clothes at highly inflated prices. A new documentary, The True Costs, travel around the world to bring you the reality of this industry. Melbourne event, 7 p.m. Friday, 7 p.m. Friday, 29th of May, 120 Clarendon Street, South Melbourne.
And as I mentioned before, we are in the second part of the program. We are going to bring you that interview with Miles Carroll from the KMU about the footwear company. Well, they sold thongs, or they made thongs that went up in flames. That was Kentex. So yes, the true cost of the true cost, which is a documentary, get along to it. This event is being organised and supported by the NTU and the ABSN, the Australia Bangladesh Solidarity Network. So that is 7 o'clock next Friday, the 29th of May, 120 Clarendon Street in South Melbourne. And our final story for this morning, something that should hopefully scare the pants off of everybody and scare you enough into fighting back. The far right in Australia splits while calling for new demonstrations. The far right anti-Islamic group Reclaim Australia, that held nationwide protests in early April, has split in the process of trying to organise another round of racist rallies in mid-July. The new organisation, called United Patriots Front, is organising a new rally for the 31st of May in Melbourne, and they are specifically targeting left-wing councillors of a local Melbourne council. So basically, for local Melbourne listeners, they are targeting the Socialist Party and our comrades, Steve Jolly, Anthony Main, Mel Gregson. The United Patriots Front rally is at the same time as a public meeting in Carlton to discuss how to counter Islamophobia. An anti-racist and anti-fascist rally has been organised against the United Patriots Front for the 31st of May. We're going to put all those details up on our website. We're getting into really critical times with these neo-Nazi organizers, these pro-fascists, these very, very far right-wing organizations. They are directly targeting left-wing organizers. For those listeners out there who have a theoretical understanding of fascism, you know that fascism is the last bastion of capitalism in its time of crisis, with the purpose of taking out the left. That is what we're starting to see. I don't mean to be alarmist, but we really do need to get behind these upcoming protests and stop them. Absolutely stop them. It's 10 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. Some community announcements and then our feature interview for the morning.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Hey Jodie, I'm so excited. I just can't hide it.
Oh, just in the words of the Pointer Sisters, hey. Why? What's happening?
The new 3CR t-shirts are coming out. We had a competition, Kate Reid won it, and it's so beautiful. It's got roses and a love heart, and then the caption is, "Resistance is fertile."
Oh, too deadly that, eh?
So in order to get one, go to the 3CR website and follow the link to shop. And they're $30.
$30? Oh, yeah. What a bargain.
And $25 for kids. You'll be able to secure one for yourself because they're in hot demand.
Yay, get one now.
I'm so excited. I just can't hide it. I'm about to lose control and I think I like it. Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. And I just can't hide it.
It is 12 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents. On Thursday, the 14th of May, more than 70 workers died in a factory fire in Manila in the Philippines. The factory was called Kentex and it manufactured flip-flops or thongs. In the manufacturing process, many dangerous chemicals were used, and on this fateful day, those chemicals ignited from some sparks that came from repair works that were being carried out in the factory. The factory was organised by a yellow union, and although the workers had raised health and safety concerns numerous times, the factory was deemed safe. To talk more about this industrial murder and about organising efforts that have developed since, here's Miles Caro, the Secretary of the International Department of the Kilosang Mao Uno.
Last Wednesday, around lunchtime, there was a fire that started in the first floor because the company hired a welder, and there were chemicals, almost a truckload of chemicals were just delivered. And these chemicals, called Super Seal, is highly flammable, and the fire from the welding spattered on the chemicals, and this caused the fire, which spread first in the first floor and then to the second floor and eventually engulfed the whole factory, which has two stories.
And what does the factory manufacture?
The factory is making slippers and flip-flops. These are local brands, and it is a known brand here for many ordinary citizens in the Philippines.
And is this a common situation that occupational health and safety standards are so low that a factory fire can result in the death of at least 72 people?
This incident has been the worst in many years because 72 workers have died. But in the last few years, last 3 years, there has been many incidents of similar cases of deaths in the workplace. This happened in Mindanao. Another factory broke out in a department store where 17 women workers died because the factory was locked from outside. It happened also in Pasay a few months ago in north of the Philippines. Almost the same reason, because there was not enough exit. And there are other more fire-related incidents, but there are other occupational health and safety incidences, many of them like mining workers or manufacturing workers. So the incidence of violations for occupational health and safety is very high in the Philippines.
Were the workers at the Kentex factory represented by a labor union?
They were. They had a union, but the workers said that it was a company union and that the leader was very close to the management, and that it did not really consult the workers on what they wanted and what their demands are. And this includes the the conditions in the workplace, because even before the incident, workers were already complaining that the chemicals in the factory was almost unbearable. It was the fumes was bad for their lungs, and that they feel, because the chemicals were all over the place, they feel if a small fire happens, it could really be disastrous. And they said that sometimes they just feel tired because of the extreme heat in the workplace and not just because of the workload. But of course, the workload is also heavy for them. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the workload situation and the other occupational health and safety issues that you mentioned. For instance, was there a response from the factory in relation to the chemical fumes and the degree of overwork?
Did the company responded to the working conditions?
Yeah.
The workers said that they don't, and that the union doesn't discuss about it. It has been happening many times, and they said even before, many years ago, the company was already sued, but then it reopened, and it has been operating for several years now. And in fact, the Department of Labor even gave it a certificate of compliance for occupational health and safety just this September 2014. So for the company and for the Department of Labor, there are really no violations to workers, but for the workers, they say the violations have been ongoing for many years now.
Is this a common situation that we see in the Philippines, where there's a company union that colludes with the capitalists and with the government to effectively deny workers the ability to organize?
Yes, it is common. It is one of the device way of preventing a union, which is that are pro workers. They immediately form a union, which the company forms a union which they can control, the leaders at least they can control. And so, because in the Philippines there is a rule that only one union will represent a certain number, so effectively you have to challenge it before you can form another union. So it has been practiced not only in small and medium enterprises, but even for large multinational corporations.
You've been meeting with some of the families of the victims and also some of the survivors of the factory. What have those meetings been like?
our meetings with them started with for house to house first, just talking to them, for families on what they feel and what their demands are. But this morning, we were able to have the first gathering of the families wherein the government is not there and the company is not there. It's the first meeting they hold as a group, and wherein they discuss what their feelings are right now and what they really want to demand. And they decided to form the Justice for Kentex Workers Alliance. And when somebody gave that suggestion, everybody just raised hands, and they all agreed that they should have a form of organization that will ensure that their demands will be voiced out in the public.
And so what are the families and the victims, the surviving victims, what are they demanding by way of compensation and then health and safety standards in the particular factory?
Yes. Right now, their immediate demand is for the identification of the victims. And yes, because the government promised them that there will be a DNA testing, and the government took samples of the blood of relatives and promised them that after 2 weeks the bodies will be identified. So they really want a proper closure or proper burial for their families. Secondly, they want immediate relief and lasting or long-term compensation for the families, including the loss of wages and for other violations. And then third, this is their strongest demand probably, is that they want somebody to be sentenced in prison because they have been putting up with the conditions for many years, but they did not really realize that it would end in this way. So they want the company punished, and they really want to speak out right now so that there will be no other cases of this that will happen in the future.
Is it the case that that people don't know who the victims actually are? Are there people missing in that particular factory fire? Have all of the bodies been recovered?
The counting by the government, it stopped at 72. Yes, I think yesterday or 2 days ago. But last night, we heard that another body was recovered. So maybe they will still recover some bodies. But the 72 is the official count, but many more are missing. The problem is that in the company has very few. There are just about 20 plus regular workers, which is on the list of the company. And there are about 10 plus casual workers. And then many of them are paid, it's called here as pakyawan, but it's per bulk or per piece, the many pieces you produce, that's how you get paid. So these workers, they don't have official contract. So the families know that their family member went there, but the company, we can guess that they don't have a list of the workers.
And then, I mean, this happened in a footwear garment industry factory, and we have only just passed the second year anniversary of the tragic collapse of Rana Plaza. 18 months before that, we saw the factory fire at Tazreen, both of those in Bangladesh. We know that garment industry in Pakistan is just as dangerous. Do you see a pattern across the garment industry in relation to unsafe working environments?
I think especially in the countries in Southeast Asia and South Asia, where there is a garments production, the workers are not only facing low wages, they are, the company is also cutting the cost of the production by making the cheap structure for the factories, which endangers the life of the workers. So the companies who invest here or put up a business in the garments, they really want the cheap labor and anything that will cut costs, and this will are at the expense of the lives of the workers. And this only shows that the workers for many companies, in especially in garments, they don't really have, they don't value the lives of workers, because it has been happening for many years and in many countries, and yet it's still, this condition still exists.
Does the Philippines have a very big garment industry? I mean, mostly I think Australian listeners anyway would consider that countries such as Bangladesh or Indonesia have very big garment industries. What is it like in the Philippines?
Yes. Years ago, Philippines used to have a large garments industry, but some years ago, they transferred production to mostly South Asian countries, where the wages are, I think, about half the Philippine rate. But there are still garments production here in the Philippines. One, there is production in export processing zones. These are for multinational brands. There is second, there is a production for using the subcontracting system, also for multinational brands. And then third, there are still some local garments production, but there are few. So we don't have a very large garments industry right now. But for those that were remaining, the common is that they face low wages and in harsh working conditions. Yes, but I think because the government is somehow, they are projecting that there will be more investment, especially from the Europe, in the coming years on garments. Maybe in the coming years they will open up new factories producing for multinational brands.
And in which case they will just continue to drive wages lower and lower and lower, and conditions even lower. So I guess unless we fight, we are going to continue to see the tragedies such as that we saw at Kentex, and that we saw at Tazreen, and that we saw at Rana Plaza. Are you internationalizing the strategy of fighting back? For instance, will you try to make connections with the garment industries in Bangladesh, Pakistan, Indonesia, to unite for a common cause?
Yes, we hope that we can have we can work together with unions from Bangladesh, especially, and other countries who are producing for garments like Cambodia. Because this fight for better working conditions and better wages, it has to be fought not only locally but also internationally.
That was Miles Kettle from the KMU. She's the secretary of the international department there. Speaking about the murder of more than 70 workers at Kentex footwear factory in Manila in the Philippines, just to put some of those timeframes in context. So the fire happened on Wednesday or Thursday, the 14th or 15th of May. So I conducted that interview Sunday. So when she said that the counting had stopped, it stopped about a day after the fire. And so they were still pulling bodies out some 2 to 3 days after that, but counting had stopped. That is all we have time for on today's program. You've been listening to Asia Pacific Currents. I'm Giselle Hannah.
I'm Sam.
And coming up next is Palestine Remembered.